Hey everyone, this is John, and this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. It has been nearly 2 weeks since we posted our last show, and we're not quite ready for the Super Nintendo Show just yet. There are a couple of games that we haven't put enough time into, so I wanted to get something out there, and there's been a few topics that have been on my mind recently. So I wanted to do a little recording about the general state of Nintendo. So before I dive into a lot of those topics, I wanted to start with the Club Nintendo bonus rewards, which is a topic we haven't really brought up because of some timing issues very recently. So first up, for the Wii U, you can download Kirby's Dream Land 3 for the Super Nintendo for 200 coins. And you can also download the original Metroid for the NES for 200 coins as well. And both of those are our Wii U downloads, so you get all the Wii U benefits of save states and off TV play and all that, which I think is really useful for a game like Metroid, which is really tough to play without those more user-friendly aspects to it, of just being able to quit wherever you need to, or to be able to save your place and then load it if you get into an area that's a little too tough, because it is a game that doesn't do an amazing job of guiding you. It just sets you into this world and says, go and do. For the Wii, which you can also get on your Wii U through the Wii channel, but you'll only be able to play it on the Wii channel, so you won't get all the benefits of like the save states of the Wii U versions. You can download Super Mario Kart for the Super NES for 250 coins. And also 1080 Snowboarding for the N64 for 250 coins. And hey, look at that. They acknowledge that the N64 exists. There weren't a whole lot of virtual console games on the Wii for the N64. But there were a few, and there were a few good ones. And it's nice that they're making them available for free download. For the 3DS, there are four games that you can download for coins. There is a Kappa's Trail. That's a DSiWare game. You can get that for 200 coins. And also Birds and Beans for DSiWare. You can get that one for 150 coins. I don't really know a whole lot about either game, and I was looking at some of the descriptions for them on Nintendo's website, and after doing that, I feel like I still don't know a whole lot about them. You can also download Kid Icarus of Myths and Monsters. That is a Game Boy game for 150 coins. And it's very much like the first Kid Icarus game for the NES, except, you know, it's in black and white because it's a Game Boy game. But it plays very, very similarly. You can also download Radar Mission, which is basically Battleship, which was a Game Boy game, for 150 coins. So, on the topic of the state of Nintendo, there are a couple of ways I broke this down. First, I want to talk about them and their state of their business in terms of their hardware. So I'm not going to discuss any specific numbers, because we have a precedent on this show to not discuss numbers and sales. And generally, we don't talk about how Nintendo is doing in the hardware space compared to other companies. It's just something that has never been important to us, and we've been doing the show since really the heyday of the Wii, so it's not just because they're not doing that great that we're refusing to talk about it. It's just something that we've never talked about, even when they were doing really well. So I guess we'll start with the Wii U. And you know the Wii U, this is the way things are. Sales are low, but the games are good. And I don't think that we're going to see a big turnaround of the Wii U. I don't know that they're even trying for mainstream appeal. I don't see too much effort on Nintendo's part to try to get the word out a little bit more about the Wii U, or to make things that would be massively appealing for a lot of people. I mean, they have Mario Kart, which has a lot of mass appeal, but it doesn't seem like they were making that specifically catered for a casual audience. They were making that game more for their core fan base. And they put out like Wii Sports Club, but there really wasn't a huge push behind that game. And at this point, I don't know if the same crowd that really fell in love with Wii Sports on the Wii would just be willing to play the same game again. It doesn't seem that that's the case. But, you know, things are trending up for the Wii U, but I certainly don't think you can call it a hit console at this point. It could very much end up being their worst selling console. I don't even know if you can count Virtual Boy as a console, but it certainly outsold Virtual Boy at this point. But it's is a console that the numbers haven't been very good, but software sales have been strong. And it's a shame, because the Wii U is such a great console. They're constantly providing updates for a lot of the services. There's a lot of compatibility with different devices. Of course, the gamepad it comes with, but Pro Controllers and Wii Remotes. This is a console that they give a shit about. And sometimes with the Wii, I don't want to say that they didn't care about their console, but there were things about the Wii that weren't exactly user-friendly for a core, like, long-time gaming Nintendo fan base. And the Wii U, they're very invested in improving it and improving the ecosystem of the Wii U, of the firmware, of the operating system, of services like Miiverse. They're constantly tweaking and adjusting and trying to provide the best possible console experience on there. And it's sad that not a whole lot of people have invested into the system, because it is something that they're trying really hard to make a good experience. And of course, you can't really talk about the Wii without talking about the gamepad. The off-TV play is outstanding. It's one of the most useful features of the system. Even when I first bought it, I really didn't think too much of off-TV play. But now that I have a one-year-old and a two-year-old and a wife, and everyone's always wanting to use the TV for different things, I have my own little screen that I can play just about any game on. And, you know, there's a lot of chatter every so often about Nintendo needing to justify the existence of the gamepad. And, you know, I don't really feel that that's the case. I don't think it needs any other justification other than it provides you this other window in order to experience your games. I don't know if there's going to be a huge revolutionary use for the gamepad during the Wii's life cycle. I don't think that that there needs to be. Like, this is the controller. This is that off-TV play. It's its main function. And I don't think we need some huge, like, game-changing experience to see why they designed the thing in the first place. I think it's just fine the way it is. And I recall the DS, when, like, early in the DS days, there were, like, games trying to justify the two screens and one being a touchscreen. But really, the best games and a bulk of the DS library didn't really use both screens for very much. It just became a system for great games. And I think that is, you know, what the Wii U can become. And it can still be a success story. I don't know that it will be I don't think it will be a huge sales success story. But it can be a success story in terms of Nintendo maintaining it and keeping people interested and making a lot of games and selling a lot of games, and becoming more of a rescue story in terms of keeping people interested in it and keeping the system on and running and vital for a full lifespan. The type of turnaround that they pulled with the 3DS simply doesn't happen. And the 3DS, now we're kind of transitioning to that topic. First of all, I'm trying not to read into too much of the lack of news about 3DS sales recently. I think a lot of other journalists and podcasters were looking into it as it probably being bad news about 3DS sales. And look, that may or may not be the case, but I'm just, you know, withholding judgment on how the 3DS is doing sales-wise until I actually hear something. The lack of news isn't news. And the 3DS It's been a success, despite the really rough start. And Nintendo pulled this really amazing turnaround. And like I just said, that the sort of turnaround they pulled with the 3DS does not happen in gaming hardware. So much of a game console's success is based around the launch and how much excitement there is around that and how much momentum they're able to maintain right out of the gate. The 3DS really stumbled out of the gate, and they were able to turn it into a successful, well-selling handheld. It was never going to be as big as the DS, and that's something that I've been saying since the 3DS launch. The DS was a phenomenon. They really caught lightning in a bottle, and they're in a weird position now to where they caught lightning in the bottle twice within the same generation with the DS and the Wii. And now that you know they've moved on from that generation, they're kind of struggling to find their footing and find who they want to sell their games to. And you know, a couple of things have hurt the 3DS. Not only the comparison to the DS, its older brother, but the DS I think has really been hurt by the absolute desertion of third parties. Third parties have moved on to mobile gaming, and for, you know, there's just a few reasons why they probably have just abandoned the DS. One of course is mobile games and your ability to structure your price and probably just make a really cheap game that makes a lot of money on mobile hardware. Just the rampant piracy that was on the DS. There was a time when in Europe, R4 cards were sold in stores, which were incredibly illegal devices that people used to just download any game that they wanted to play rather than buying it and supporting the developers. And you know, because of the desertion of third parties on the 3DS, we've really lost the sort of mid-tier gaming experiences, the sort of games that aren't AAA but aren't shovelware, but they're just really solid, dependable gaming experiences that really has disappeared from gaming on most platforms. And really, on the 3DS, we're down to four main developers / publishers that are still making like cartridge games for the systems, like interesting cartridge games. And that's, of course, Nintendo, you got Level 5, Square Enix, and Atlus. And that's it. Those are the four companies that are making interesting and worthwhile game experiences on the actual cartridges that you can buy at retail. And you know, more software could reinvigorate the 3DS. I don't know how much more life they want out of it. And of course, they do have the hardware update coming, which will probably resell to those of us who are heavily invested into the platform. Whether or not they have super compelling software for it or not, there are those of us like me who will just buy it because it's a new 3DS. And you know, they're in a dangerous position to where they may have to launch two platforms close to each other, like they did with the 3DS and the Wii. Well, the 3DS and the Wii, they had about a year between, but it's probably maybe in their best interest to sort of stagger them a little bit more than they've been staggered. They got an amazing lifespan out of the DS, about 8 years of quality, steady software coming out of it. And, you know, we're about to hit the four-year anniversary of the 3DS pretty soon, which is a respectable lifespan for a handheld, but I don't know if they're ready or willing to launch a brand new platform just yet. And I don't even know where they go with a new platform if they continue the DS line. But that's a subject for a little bit later on. Let's go into a sort of other hardware topic in Amiibo. And first of all, everybody just take it down a notch. There is a collector's craze setting in to where these things are, you know, outselling the pre-orders. The pre-orders are getting canceled and there's supply constraints. And there's rumors that Nintendo is discontinuing certain figures, certain characters. And I just find that really hard to believe, despite Nintendo's sort of cryptic responses to whether or not these things have been discontinued. Why would they destroy the mold for these things? Maybe they don't have any particular plans to make new, like, villagers or Wii Fit trainers anytime soon. But why would they say, okay, well, we've made all the villagers we're ever going to make, let's just throw this thing away? I think it's impossible that they never make more of every figure because of how well they're selling. There's that sort of craze around it because there is that initial scarcity. But I think once, you know, they get all of the initial run out, like they have 49 figures to work through here, and I think they want to get them out as soon as possible. So once they get everything out, I think that the remaining, like, really scarce figures will be around. We'll see them. They'll make more because they're hot commodities, and, you know, Nintendo is actually making something that people want to buy, which is, you know, not a super common experience for them recently. So I can't see them wanting to just stop making certain figures altogether that people want. So, you know, Amiibo is actually in kind of a weird place for consumers because they're so hard to find, and people are going to multiple stores and pre-ordering in multiple places, and online retailers are canceling and this and that, and there's all this craziness going on. But, you know, it's a product that Nintendo is putting out that people are buying, so it's good news for them. So, in terms of software, there's a couple of topics I want to touch on. And, you know, first of all, Nintendo's own first-party software. Nintendo's in a funny place because, you know, they have this hardware that doesn't have huge appeal, although it has a dedicated fan base. And they have... They're releasing first-party games which aren't fucking broken. And it's kind of an interesting phenomenon, especially this holiday season, where, you know, there are Nintendo games that are coming out 1080p, 60 frames per second, online, specifically Smash Brothers, and they fucking work. And who'd have thought that in 2014... you know, Microsoft would put out a Halo game where the online doesn't work, and Nintendo would put out a Smash Brothers game where the online works nearly perfectly. It is a strange turnaround where, you know, the state of the industry generally is you have day one patches that are multiple gigabytes that people have to download to get their games to work. And then you have Nintendo, who is still releasing complete packages that are very technically sound, and the games are actually fucking finished. And then they're actually, like, making deadlines, so not having to delay games to do it. And I suppose companies want to make deadlines because they want to make a release schedule, so they're releasing games that are incomplete and they're just counting on patching them later. But it doesn't do anything to foster any goodwill with consumers if you're releasing a broken product and expecting people to pay full price and then just dropping the price a couple of months later. And I personally don't understand how these games keep selling if they're destroying people's faith in that they will be quality products. So, Nintendo is actually handling the transition to the sort of, like, modern method of gaming well, like the HD gaming era. You know, they had a rocky start because, you know, takes a little bit more work than they were probably used to, but, you know, they're transitioning well. They're making small steps, they're making steady steps into the sort of modern gaming space. They're handling things like DLC very well, which is something I touched on with my friends Jody and Ryan on the mini show recently. They're even experimenting with free-to-play games with Rusty's Real Deal Baseball and Steel Diver Subwars. And they're being incredibly prolific about, you know, making games. They're supporting two platforms nearly by themselves. And they've always been a prolific developer, but they are really putting in the overtime here and bringing out a lot of really good quality software and tons of it. You know, There are gaming droughts from time to time, But if you just think about like the amount of content that Nintendo puts out and compare that with the amount of content that any other developer puts out, it's amazing how much they're able to produce. So, and you know, they're presenting their software in some really great ways too. They're presenting it to their longtime fans, and it's like a sort of meet the developer kind of way. You're able to see the people who are making the games, or they're letting us in on the process by which their games are made, which is great. It's really fucking cool to see developers talking about their games and how they're producing the games and how like they're creating the content in the games. So they do have deadlines to meet, and they're actually meeting them. And really, like, I've talked about this before, they're meeting these deadlines because they have to. Like, they don't have other support, especially on the Wii U and even the 3DS. Like I talked about before, the support is scarce. So they have games that are in the works, and they have planned deadlines, and they have to make them because they don't have anything else to lean upon in their release schedules. But, you know, they're in a really great place in terms of their first-party software. They're being really creative with the franchises they have. I think that this generation probably has a stronger chance of returning to, like, some forgotten franchises that they haven't touched on in a while. It's been a really great time in terms of their first-party software because they've tried new things, and they've made a whole lot of games, which is always good news for us. But, you know, in terms of their partners, there's virtually no third parties left, especially on the Wii U. I've already talked about the ones left on the DS. And, you know, if you think about it, who are the big Japanese third parties that are left? Like Capcom, what did they release? One game this year that wasn't a remake or a port? And Konami, what did they make this year? You have, like, Bandai Namco, and they fucking made Smash Brothers. They're making Nintendo games. And Tecmo Koei, they made Hyrule Warriors. They're making Nintendo games. And Nintendo's in a position where they're basically sponsoring these sort of Japanese development projects. And not only games like Smash Brothers and Hyrule Warriors, but Bayonetta 2 and Devil's Third. It's a really difficult position for them to be in, like, because they can't maintain that. They can't be solely responsible for maintaining the Japanese gaming industry, like them and Square Enix and Level 5 and Atlus. Like, these other companies, developers, have to get it together and have to find a way to make products that people are interested in. But specifically Nintendo, they have to find a way to bring in developers. Maybe they do that by continuing to let them work on Nintendo franchises, games that they're confident that will sell, and that we've talked about before. Like, maybe they have to find a way to fund development of just straight Wii U ports. And I'm specifically thinking of Capcom here, who I have not been pleased with recently about their decisions with the Resident Evil franchise, of making Resident Evil Revelations 2 and porting the GameCube remake to the other HD systems. And I think I've mentioned before, you know, Nintendo could approach them and say, hey, look, we want these games on our system. We can pay for the effort it would take to port them, but we get to publish them, we get to put them on the eShop, we're not going to do a retail release, and we get to keep a majority of the money that we make from selling it on the eShop. And, you know, maybe there's some other details that they can work out with Capcom to make that sort of thing happen. But I find it really insulting that Capcom doesn't think it's worth it to put Resident Evil games on Nintendo systems when, you know, Revelations sold over a million on the DS. The Wii U version didn't do so hot, but they have to take into account that the people who would buy the Wii U version already fucking had it on the 3DS. And, like, Resident Evil 4 for the Wii sold over a million. Umbrella Chronicles, Darkside Chronicles, they sold really well on the Wii. This is a franchise that Nintendo fans will support, but they're just content putting it on other systems and forgetting that Nintendo systems exist. And I think Nintendo can do something to help that situation, but I don't know how interested they are in doing it. And, you know, Nintendo also can't permanently basically subsidize gaming on their platform. They can't publish everything. They can't sustain anything by themselves. They have to find ways to get other partners interested in the system. And, you know, the install base is the first thing that people will go to when they're talking about why publishers aren't putting games on that system. And I think that's part of it. But Nintendo's always got that stigma to overcome to where, you know, only their games sell on their system. And, you know, for a significant majority of the time, for a significant portion of examples, you know, that's correct. There aren't a huge amount of third-party success stories on Nintendo systems since, you know, the N64 days or since the GameCube days. And that a lot of times falls upon those of us who really want the system to succeed and really want more games on the system, is we have to find a way to sustain that. And, you know, maybe those of us who demand more games be put on the system, maybe there just aren't enough of us to sustain that on ourselves. But, you know, there's a huge amount of buzz around, like, a Bayonetta 2. It has Game of the Year buzz. There was excitement around it. Nintendo was pushing it. And it sold decently, but it wasn't a huge hit. And, you know, the install base of dedicated users for the Wii U should have been big enough to make that game a bigger hit. And I don't want to say that the bulk of the blame is on us as platform holders and people who are invested in the platform, but there has to be a way for Nintendo to reach that hardcore base and convince us that there are these other games that are worth getting that don't have Mario and Link in them. So let's move over to the eShop. Well, I don't really have a whole lot of thoughts on. The eShop on the Wii is great. There are really good games on it. There are games that I can't keep up with. And, you know, keep them coming, because there are, and hopefully these games are finding success on the Wii. But yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff and a lot of stuff worth playing. The 3DS hasn't had the same steady stream of quality stuff. But there's a lot of good stuff. And every couple of months, we get a really good 3DS eShop experience, but there's also a lot of garbage that you have to sift through, which is unfortunate. But the 3DS eShop has been solid, and Nintendo has made some real progress with their, you know, online shop experience. Not only with, like, shared accounts or, like, the shared wallet, but just getting developers and independent developers interested in making stuff for their eShop space. You know, and really, and they've also started, like, pre-ordering and pre-downloading certain software, and I can see that only expanding, because I imagine that's going to be a big thing for them, because, like, the margin, the profit margin on these digital games is going to be so huge, because there's no overhead for, like, packaging and shipping and all that, and getting these stores to the retailer. You don't even have to cut the retailer in for a percentage of the sale. So, you know, the ability to, like, pre-download a game and just have it available, like, at midnight on the day that it comes out is probably a huge appeal for people who download a lot of games. So it's something that I can see Nintendo, like, only continuing to expand. I think really the only thing left that's kind of lacking on the eShop is that ability for cross-buy, especially for virtual console games, like the ability to say, I now own Super Mario Bros. 3, And since I bought it once, I have it on both systems. And, you know, in the perfect world, you just have it in perpetuity. Going forward on Nintendo systems, Super Mario 3 will just come with you wherever you go. But the 3DS and the Wii U virtual consoles don't, or eShops don't speak to each other that way. And really, the virtual console is so tragically under-leveraged a lot of times. I think that the virtual console releases the past year have gotten better, but it's still not blowing anyone away. There's still a lot of like Super Nintendo games and NES games and fucking N64 games that don't exist, but the Wii had a very good library of this stuff, and I don't know what the hurdle is to make that available on the Wii U. There must be something that, you know, has been worked out, because the whole like trickling out a game here, a game there, I don't understand how that's an appealing method. I would think that being able to open up the eShop and opening up a section for Super Nintendo games and having this huge, basically, shelf of games available to pick from and download would be a lot more appealing than, you know, opening up every couple of weeks, seeing what's been added, checking the new releases, and maybe seeing a NES game or a Super Nintendo game here and there that may or may not be appealing at all. So I'm going to take a quick break and then come back with a couple more topics that I wanted to talk about. So, there's a couple more topics that I wanted to get into that are sort of related to Nintendo as a software developer. I wanted to talk about the state of Nintendo for a little bit in terms of where they are artistically speaking. So Nintendo's a development studio that has said multiple times that they're not making art, and it's like they're like trying to present themselves as if they're not artists, but they are, whether they like it or not. There is no other development studio that puts as much effort into the actual design of the structure and the mechanics of games as they do. They do so much more to leverage a single idea or mechanic as much as they possibly can. And I'll point to specifically Captain Toad as an example there, which is a game we've talked about in a limited amount, and it's another one I'm going to get into at the end of the month, a little bit deeper. But it's a game where they pack so much into such a small container that they really leverage the idea of kind of the puzzle box to a really amazing extent. It's astounding how much they're able to get into these small levels to really create this fantastic sense of discovery throughout the entire game. And it's always building on itself there. There's not a whole lot of recycled ideas. There's a tremendous variety to the amount that they put into each different stage. And I'll also point to Splatoon, which the more I see of it, the more I'm excited to see what they do with the single-player stuff, because it's a very simple idea to where, you know, you're moving faster and you're able to navigate different terrains if you've painted it. And I'm really excited to see how they're able to leverage that in all sorts of different situations. And from what we've really briefly seen, it looks like they're going to be able to do a really big amount with the one single idea. So Nintendo builds these ideas within the games, and not only like do they do different things, but they expand the idea and expand your skill set with the basic mechanics. And it's a tough differentiation to make, leveraging a single idea and expanding the idea. But I believe there is a difference there that's worth trying to discuss through the limited language that we have in terms of video games as an artistic form. Games like Pikmin 3, I'll point to that as an example. You do a bunch of different things because you're manipulating the environment in a lot of different ways with different color Pikmin, and it very slowly expands the amount of tasks you're able to do, primarily by expanding the abilities of your Pikmin by giving you the different color ones. But as you're gaining more Pikmin and are able to use them together in different ways, the levels that they put you in, you're able to chip away at more of them, and it expands your skill set with how you're manipulating or interacting with the game. And then by the end, and it's really fantastic. I know a lot of people have gotten frustrated with the final boss, but it really does utilize every single skill that you've come to acquire throughout the entire game. And Mario platformers, especially the 2D ones, are really fantastic at this as well, where you don't realize that the game is teaching you to be better at the game throughout the entire game. But if you were to start the game at the final level, it would be really difficult. The game does a very good job of honing your skills, even though you might not realize that that's what it's doing. So they not only construct these games based on really interesting mechanics, like they start with the mechanic first, but they use their franchises to sort of leverage that mechanic and execute these ideas. But they always start with this core mechanic. I say always, but they probably do set out to say, hey, maybe we should make a new Mario game, or maybe we should make a new Zelda game. But they're really creative stuff. They always say they start with an idea and then go from there. Like, is there a franchise that we can leverage this idea with? Or maybe it's its own thing. Maybe it's like Splatoon, where it doesn't really fit into any particular franchise, so they create a new one. So in a gaming environment with so many annualized series built around the sort of larger concept of the games, I'm going to point to Call of Duty and Madden and Assassin's Creed, where 90% of the time they're doing these type of games every year, and they're just basically based around, well, we have to do a new Call of Duty. What is Call of Duty? And then they just kind of develop another one and put it out there. And it's just really refreshing to see Nintendo use franchises as vehicles for ideas rather than say, hey, we should make another Kirby game and just kind of throw out a standard Kirby game with no really interesting mechanic to it. So Nintendo, as artists, I think they're one of the few development houses that really do make art in terms of a game as art, something that where the interaction between the player and the game is the primary focus of it, and the games grow and expand and you get better at them, not because of a searing difficulty, but the game teaches you how to be better and shows you how to be better through asking you to do different things throughout. And it's really its own art form, where it's very separate from film or literature or sculpture. There's something very unique about a gaming experience where the interaction between the player and the game is really fine-tuned, and Nintendo is very, very good at that, which makes them artists, even though they don't like to admit it. So, there's one last thing that I wanted to touch on, and that is the online experience and the state of Nintendo in that. The first thing I wanted to touch on is Miiverse, kind of sort of their online social interaction hub. And it's a really fun little network, especially for an internet recluse like me who doesn't really touch Facebook or Twitter or Tumblr or Instagram or any of that stuff. It's nice to be able to interact with people that I know have the same interests as me. And it's a shame sometimes that they can be very strict with the guidelines with interacting with people. And if you want to exchange like friend codes for your systems, that's not something that they allow over Miiverse. So, it would be cool if you could be more social in that way through their social network. I think they've gotten a bit gun shy since the swap note incident a while back before they took that service down. It is what it is, and it's still cool to have a social network with people who enjoy the same stuff that I do. So, and speaking of friend codes, they're still a hassle, but it's not as bad as it used to be. I think they're slowly but surely kind of fine-tuning the online experience to where it's getting to a place where it's comparable with other online infrastructures. Voice chat is, of course, nearly non-existent, and for me, I think that's probably for the best. There are things that I shout at my television when I'm getting frustrated with a game that I probably shouldn't say to other people. And the really fascinating thing about Nintendo's online presence is that the games are going online and they are actually working, which doesn't seem like it should be that novel of a concept in 2014, but between all of the broken games that have been released this year, it's crazy to think, and I think I mentioned this earlier in the show, it's crazy to think that Nintendo is the one who is nailing it. Whereas 5 years ago, the exact opposite was true. So, one thing that will be kind of cool in Nintendo's online presence is if you could send direct messages to friends not on Miiverse. Like, if you look at your friends list and see who's playing and you can send them a direct message, that would kind of pop up on their screen, like a little ticker note or something. So, if they're playing, Resident Evil Revelations, for example, and you want to jump into some Mario Kart, you could send them a message, it'll pop up, and they could choose to join you in Mario Kart or not. So it'd be cool to have that sort of more direct interaction, and maybe going forward, that's something that they'll revisit. So that's all the topics that I wanted to cover in terms of the state of Nintendo. There is, of course, room for improvement in, of course, their hardware space. There's lots of room for improvement there. But Nintendo in general, I don't think I've ever seen them be more prolific or creative with the things that they're doing, the things they're attempting, and ambitious with the things they're doing. Certainly not in the Wii era, which, we started the show during the Wii era, and there were some really fantastic games on the Wii. But I think the things that they are trying now and how prolific they're being, it really is a great time to be playing Nintendo software. So, what does the future hold for Nintendo? In the handheld space, I think we may be nearing the end of the sort of DS line. I don't think that the 3DS is going to be replaced anytime super soon. But I think we might be saying goodbye to the DS as a sort of family of systems. Maybe they'll kind of return to the Game Boy and see if maybe they can leverage that to sort of reintroduce or repenetrate the sort of casual gaming market that's really familiar with that name. Maybe they'll try something completely new. But I think after the 3DS and stumbling out of the gate and having branding issues and then having sort of the 3D being dangerous for children kind of come back to bite them a little bit. I don't think that was super harmful, but it's been an issue. I think maybe that they're going to be moving away from the sort of dual screen handhelds, or at least the branding of them as Nintendo DS. I think the big question is, can they put out something that can achieve that sort of mainstream success that they had with the Game Boy and with the original DS? Do they even want that sort of mainstream success, or do they want to continue to go after the really dedicated gaming crowd that buys a lot of software? I think it's also worth thinking about if they're going to actually be continuing producing cartridges and having their games released at retail, or will they go into a digital-only space? I think the eShop has been a pretty good test space for them to do that sort of thing, and I think it's been pretty successful for them. They're putting all of their stuff onto the eShop. Everything's going to be available digitally. Maybe their next handheld will be compatible with some really high capacity SD cards, perhaps, and just go strictly digital. Which, I like having a collection, that physical collection, but I think one day the sort of retail box copies will probably go away. That just seems to be the direction things are moving in, which is a shame. I do like having a library, but cutting out that whole production line would allow them to just to reallocate those resources to actually producing more games. So I don't think that their handhelds are going to disappear. I think that there's something really valuable in an experience that you could only have on a handheld. And I think that's why Nintendo has been so successful in both home console and handheld spaces individually. They're very distinct from each other. And even though they do have certain aspects that cross over, and they probably should communicate more, I don't like the idea of having a gaming device that is both your handheld and your home console, because the experiences can be so unique. And I fear that if they're to go in the direction of having something that is both a handheld and a console, one of the two experiences would go away, and it would probably be the handheld experience. They've been very, very good the past two decades about creating things on handhelds that work very well as handheld gaming devices or gaming experiences. And it's something that is hard to put into words what they do, what they do and how they do it. Because it has become so ubiquitous, very just part of like the common vernacular, where something is a handheld game, there's sort of there's understood qualities to what those are. So I don't think that they're going to merge the console experience with the handheld experience or vice versa. And I certainly don't think that the Wii U is the end of their home console. I think that there will certainly be another Nintendo console, and one after that, and one after that. They're not going to stop. Nintendo does have a huge stigma to overcome. Their sort of really unique and whimsical style, which is often considered for children by, the 13-year-olds who populate message boards. But and also the stigma that only their game, or that they make the same games over and over, which is really, really untrue. And I think on a few shows back, we sort of broke down the most recent Zelda games and how they're very different from each other. And it is really uninformed to think that they're making the same games over and over again. So my question would be, are these stigmas that Nintendo even wants to attempt to overcome? Should they want to attempt to overcome them? They seem to be stigmas, held by people who are really uninformed about the type of games they make. What can Nintendo do to overcome them, other than to keep doing what they're doing, and that is to be creative and try different things and expand on unique ideas and doing it through the vehicle of their own recognizable franchises? So, I don't know what the future holds for how they're going to deal with the preconceived notions around their software and their hardware. And even if they were to re-enter the hardware race, as in make something just as powerful as the other competing systems, would that even still draw in developers? Because I think there is a stigma around developing for Nintendo systems that, especially for Western developers, if you're doing it, you're not developing games seriously, which I don't know where that came from, but it's definitely a vibe that I pick up from a lot of Western game-focused developers. So Nintendo needs to do something to forge really tight partnerships and get more games on future hardware iterations. They can't sustain an ecosystem where they are the only company, the only developer making games for the systems. And I think there's definitely some work that they can do there. I think that getting the message out to their core fan base, like I was mentioning before, trying to tap into that core fan base to sort of expand their horizons and move beyond buying just the Marios and the Zeldas. I think there can be value in that. And I think that they just need to continue to offer a unique experience back before the Wii U launched. I kind of convinced myself that having equal power to the other contemporary systems at the time would be a good thing, because they would get the ports of other games that the other systems are getting. And not only has that not happened, but I've kind of come to realize that I don't care about those games. I want something that's unique and different, and things that you can only find on Nintendo systems. And I want more companies to put the sort of care and creativity into making different types of experiences other than the action and shooting and racing and sports games that heavily populate the other systems. So, you know, and beyond consoles and handhelds, Nintendo does have like some coals in the fire that will be interesting to see what they do in the future. Like with their whole quality of life space, will there be like a game aspect to that type of stuff, or will it just be them doing support software for already existing or already conceived sort of products? And who knows what they're up to in that particular space? They mentioned it during like an investor briefing a while back, and there were the news going around about using like sleep monitor machines and things like that. But we haven't really heard a whole lot of details about how that's going to work as a product. And then, of course, Amiibo continues to be hot sellers, not just the figures. But maybe one day they will go beyond the plastic figurines and go into like trading cards or like little plastic tokens like Pogs or something. So it'll be interesting to see how they leverage that sort of collector's aspect of those type of things as well. And then, of course, the mobile space is always something that the investors bring up when sort of trying to force Nintendo's hand to enter that space and to tap into that money-making market. And, you know, maybe at some point they do more apps or like little small games, things like that. But, you know, leveraging that sort of platform just to increase profit margin is something that I don't think Nintendo really gives a shit about. And if they gave a shit about it, I think they would have jumped into it a lot sooner. So, you know, having investors hounding Nintendo to get into that space as a company is one of the symptoms of the sort of incorporated capitalist economy that we've kind of developed as a global economy. And it's something where companies are beholden to their investors rather than the consumer. And that, I don't think that benefits anyone except the investors. And I think that Nintendo, more than some other companies, sometimes just doesn't care about what their investors want. They care about their product. They care about their art, even though they don't want to consider it that. And I think that their downright refusal to listen to the sort of demands from their own investors to enter that space only further proves that they are artists creating art in this digital space. And I wish that more companies would have that sort of integrity, not to just go for whatever will get them the quickest cash grab, to actually craft something creative and of quality. And that's really all I have to say. Nintendo, they do control their own destiny. They're in a tough position, but they can find their way out of this. And they've always taken the slow and steady approach, really conservative, letting their creativity come through in their game design rather in their business practices. And it's why they've been such a steady company for 125 years, but especially for the time that they've been producing video games. And, you know, they're not going anywhere. And as long as they're around, the Nintendo will be around as well. So that's going to close out this show. In a couple of days, I'm going to get everyone back together for a Super Nintendo, because I have been hitting Lufia and the Fortress of Doom pretty hard, and I got a lot of things I want to say about that, and there's a couple other games on tap as well. And then before the month is over, we will have the official show posted as well. So within the next couple of weeks, we're going to have a bunch of shows, or three shows specifically, posted. And we won't do our look back into 2014 until 2014 is actually over. So probably the mini show in January will be our look back into 2014. So until then, everybody.